And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report. Welcome. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. We broadcast live each and every weeknight from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Wow, what a show we have planned for you this day. Paul McGuire is going to be coming right up here. Folks, we broadcast each and every weeknight, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Global Star Radio Network. That's the place to be. And we also simulcast on Blog Talk Radio, BTR. And you can watch us live on YouTube as well. Two websites we've got, HagmanReport.com, that's for the news and analysis of the news, and, of course, show and show stuff at HagmanandHagman.com. I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us tonight. Thank you so much for your belief and your trust in us tonight. Oh, my goodness. I talked to so many people here today. Last night's show was good, wasn't it?
It was very good.
Last show with Brandon House.
Got some great feedback from listeners and emails. I want to thank you guys for sending those. And we have another great show lined up for you tonight. We have Paul McGuire. Go to paulmcguire.us to bookmark his website. He has a radio show each and every day, heard on Blog Talk Radio, 4 to 6 p.m., The Paul McGuire Report. And underneath in the YouTube description, if you scroll down, he's got a prayer meeting coming up, the Paradise Mountain Church prayer meeting. Check out that for details and go to his website also. He's going to be talking about that, as well as his latest book, The Prophecy of the Future of America 2016-2017.
An entirely different book than A Prophecy of the Future of America, the initial one. An entirely different book. They're both great. This is great. This has a different flavor to it than the first one, but it's got the same. They're both great, but this is key. I want to jump in here just to ask people, folks, have you done it yet? Have you gone? Speaking of books, have you gone to Amazon and gotten your copy of T.C. Joseph's This Generation, a series of novels? Have you done that, folks? This is a thrilling series of novels. T.C. Joseph. Takes us into the lives of three families in a world where conspiracy theories and Bible prophecies collide. Folks, go to Amazon.com or ThisGenerationSeries.com to get your novels. This is a great tool to give to people to awaken them to the to the events of today through a minor fictionalized account of biblical prophecy. It's a good read. The series, the first book is book one is Precipice, book two is Pentecost, and the third book, which is almost out, is Penance. T.C. Joseph, remember that name. You're going to be hearing more about that, about him and about his novels, but more about that later. That's T.C. Joseph at ThisGenerationSeries.com. But yeah, Joe, that book, Prophecy of the Future of America, really, Paul knocks it out of the park. And speaking of writing, too, Paul wrote an article end of last month, I guess about a week old now, the 2016 election and the future of America. The upcoming presidential election is far more competition between two different candidates, far more than competition than between two different candidates. Man, good article. Says a lot.
And again, go to paulmcguire.us for Paul's website, and you can get the links to his radio show, his books, and everything is there. With that, let's bring Paul back on. Paul, it's great to have you back on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Joe, Doug, it's great to be on. And is my audio clear?
It is crystal clear, Paul.
Thanks. Oh, good, good. Great to be on, guys.
No, it's great to have you on. You're looking fabulous as well. What are you still doing in your pajamas?
Looking fabulous. I deliberately covered my microphone with a piece of my video camera with a piece of paper, so I hope I'm not on visually.
No. I'm just we're kidding around. Folks, Paul McGuire, paulmcguire.us, a great friend of the program, a great guy. just I think a lot of this man. I really do. Paul, you wrote a fantastic article about the elections. It's on your website. Just want to say thank you for alerting us to that article and for writing that. You said more than you said what was on our mind, my mind anyway.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. That was a hard article to write.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a hard time for people to really comprehend in many ways, isn't it? I mean, we see what's happening, but a lot of times that comprehension of really what's taking place, the events taking place, is a little bit difficult sometimes to really wrap your mind around, especially if you're not in the right mindset.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a very, very... This is probably the most unique time I can think of, at least in my lifetime. Just watching things through the media, which is so distorted in America, the major media, the alternative media, you have to be discerning, but at least it gives you a more honest and realistic picture with programs like yours, the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. Because without that, all we would be getting is this distorted propaganda. But yeah, it's very difficult because we have these members of the major media which are interpreting information for us. But as I've said before in your program, all of the major media, or at least most of them, are controlled by just six corporations. So just six corporations control all of the flow of information to Americans and basically around the world. If we go back 15 years ago, 20 years ago, it was probably 35 corporations controlled the media. And if you go back like 50 years ago or so, it was like 100 corporations controlled the major media. But now just six corporations. Now, when we say corporations, the interesting thing is that these corporations, the six corporations that control the major media, are the globalists that we're always talking about. So the elite globalists have managed to totally dominate the information we get, and they get to interpret reality for us. And as an add-on, and I'm sure many of your listeners feel this way themselves, but the propaganda, the lying, I mean, I'm talking about the absolute total 24/7 lying and attack mode of some of these cable news networks is like nothing I've ever seen before. It's like one particular network, it's like every time I randomly hit this network at any place within an hour or a 30-minute, you know, show cycle, whenever I turn on this network when I'm channel surfing, everything is an attack on Trump. Every little statement, no matter what he says, it's attack mode, attack mode, attack mode. And then the lying, no journalistic integrity whatsoever. I mean, they will deliberately misquote polls. They'll deliberately take things out of context, just flat out lying. And I remember when I was attending the University of Missouri, people always said to me, well, why didn't you major in journalism? Because it had one of the best journalism schools in the country. And I wasn't interested in journalism at that time. But at least 30 years ago or more, and going back again, 10, 15, 20 years ago, there was some effort to maintain what was called journalistic standards of objectivity and fairness. Now, they weren't fair. The liberal media has always been liberal. But at least they made an effort, some kind of effort. Now there's no effort whatsoever. It's just total lying and distortion based on whatever their political agenda is. And it's absolutely, it's frightening. It's frightening because you know what it reminds me of? I wasn't there, of course, but it reminds me of what Germany must have been like right before Adolf Hitler and during the time of Adolf Hitler, when so-called normal, polite, so-called courteous, relatively average Americans, except for the fact that they're financially affluent, the media personalities, they can transform themselves like with the snap of a finger, and they have become like little monsters of lying and distortion. And I don't know whether they realize it or not. I mean, I think they're so into it and so engulfed into it that they've lost all sense of self-reflection. But these people that some of them were at least once somewhat, even in a minor way, objective journalists, they have now become total prostitutes and propagandists. And it's watching average people, so-called average people, become evil. I mean, really evil. They morph themselves into these evil people, and it's really frightening because it shows you how with very little effort, when circumstances change in a nation or a culture, people can become the diametric opposite of what they once were. Like in the time of Hitler and the Third Reich, most of these people were middle class, decent, hard working, honest people. But then, you know, you go down 12 months and they're running concentration camps and incinerating human bodies and starving them to death and stuff, and then going home to their nice dining rooms with the candles lit, playing classical music, and being very polite to one another. So I see the same thing happening with a lot of the major media in our country right now. It's really scary.
Yeah, it is, Paul. And you know, they're prostitutes. I think I don't know if Alex Jones had coined that phrase, but they're prostitutes in the press. But it's, you know, it's something because even today. Well, think back when Kennedy was assassinated. My goodness, during that decade, the years after the Kennedy assassination, no one, you didn't talk about the assassination in polite company like the conspiracy angle of it. Oh, Oswald and the story, it was not discussed in polite company, the conspiracy part of it. Now, today, you've got things happening all around that's covered up by the press, and you know, it's almost as if we're following that same pattern which you equated to in reference to Nazi Germany or the years before the immediate time before, and I agree with that. Yeah, we're being gamed.
Yeah, we're being gamed big time. And what is most disturbing is the continual bold, aggressive lying, where they throw fairness, objectivity totally out the window, and they distort. And one of the biggest things they do in terms of lying is not actually what they say or not actually what they report. One of the biggest things they do in terms of lying is what they fail to show, what they choose not to report, as long as it furthers their agenda. And again, my criticism is not being made in terms of partisan politics. My criticism is about no fairness, no objectivity, propaganda, and lying. I mean, you could switch the candidates around, but an example would be, and again, people are going to say, well, he's being partisan. No, I'm not being partisan. I'm simply observing a factual reality. When I was watching the Pence and Kane debate the other night, it was obvious to me, as it was to you and your listeners, that the moderator allowed Kane, I believe it was 72 times he interrupted Pence, 72 times. I mean, it was obnoxious. It was like weird. But it was very conspicuous to me, like 10 minutes into the debate, that the moderator, not that I recall, maybe she did, but she never corrected Kane for interrupting Pence, which he did 72 times. As Kane continued to interrupt Pence 72 times, she always corrected them both as if both were guilty of it. Now, you know, she made comments like, you guys have to stop, I'm paraphrasing, interrupting everyone another. She kept saying that, but they weren't interrupting one another. Kane was interrupting Pence. I mean, that's just an objective fact. And, You know, I knew it would be rigged. I'll tell you what, I don't understand this. I knew the first debate would be rigged. The presidential debate would be rigged. I knew this would be rigged. I knew the town hall meeting would be rigged. I knew it for a certainty. And I knew that it would primarily be rigged via the moderators. Because the minute they showed who the moderators were before the debates began, you know, it was obvious that the moderators had a liberal democratic background. And I said to myself, how could they possibly, even with the best of intentions, be fair? And I knew they would rig it. And so it didn't surprise me at all that, is it Lester Holt? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, Holt.
Yeah, it didn't surprise me at all the way he participated in the manipulation. He was the third debater. And so it didn't surprise me at all. At first, when the vice presidential debate began, I took a deep breath of relief, and I said, well, thank God this woman has some integrity. She's not going to allow her own personal feelings or whatever to rule the way she moderates. And I thought, wow, she's actually going to be fair. I said to myself, I'm shocked. But then the constant ignoring of Kane's interruptions, and it was just, again, she rigged it. She threw the game. And I don't understand why the conservatives continually allow themselves, even in the next presidential debate, they continually allow themselves to be put under the control of openly biased moderators. I don't get that.
Yeah, and we have Anderson Cooper and another female journalist who is going to be moderating this next debate. And listening to Sean Hannity yesterday, he was talking about how these two have been chomping at the bit and arguing with each other over, you know, who's going to be the one to get to ask Trump, you know, certain questions, and already, you know, trying to set up in a biased debate in a way.
But you know what, Joe and Paul, what we watched, and to be fair, it wasn't a debate. You go back to 1960 and look at the debate between Kennedy and Nixon. There was Howard K. Smith was the moderator there. I mean, it was simple. There was a chair for Howard K. Smith in a two chairs, one for each for Kennedy and Nixon in a podium that they shared. And it was just really simple, and a microphone. The questions were the same for both candidates. There was respect for time limitations. There was no interruption because they both were not mic'd up at the same time. It could be done today, but it's not. But what we saw, in my belief, what we saw was not a debate, but just two press conferences taking place simultaneously, with an obnoxious SOB butting in every 5 minutes, or trying to butt in. That's just my view. Anyway.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I don't understand why the conservatives allow that. And since they, unless there's something that I don't know why they have to accept it, part of me is saying, well, you deserve what you agree to. I mean, if you're going to agree to be abused in every debate, then you kind of deserve it. I lose my sympathy, because nobody can be that stupid to not assume that they're not going to be gamed. And so to walk in there and act surprised that you're actually being gamed when you should have known it before you got into the debate, it's like, I don't have any sympathy. It's like being really, really gullible and really stupid. And if you're going to be running for a high-level political office, you can't afford the luxury of being stupid and naive, you know. So
that's true. I picture you, if you were in that position, regardless. I mean, if you were in that position, regardless of party, I could picture you dictating the terms of the debate to such an extent where you would make sure it's all fair, it's equitable, and it's not this dog and pony show that we've been seeing. And I think that's a responsibility of each individual person that would agree to that scenario. I mean, just,
well, yeah. So like I did. Well, all I did on Fox News Network and the Fox Business Channel and CNN, I was on constantly to debate. That's what I did. I debated, and it was always me versus one liberal radio talk show host. or depending upon the network, it would be me against three or four. And and I did this a lot, okay? So debating. And I remember my first debate, and I made a mistake. It was my first debate on national television on the big cable news network. So I went in there because I was basically a good debater and articulate, and I figured on that basis I could win. Well, in my first debate, I held my own. I can't say I won. And I was caught off guard, and I was working too hard, and I realized, you know, you got to wake up. You can't walk in there cold like this. So I began to study methodically by videotaping all the debates on the cable news network channels, and many of them, many of the people in the debates were people that I would end up shortly debating. And I studied like a prize fighter would study video or film footage of his opponent and his boxing style. I studied the techniques that my potential opponents would use, like the way they interrupted and how they interrupted and how they got away with interrupting. And they all had their little strategies and stuff. So this one guy was very aggressive, and I held my own with him barely in my first debate. But the second debate was on the biggest cable news network. I debated him, and I clobbered him. And I clobbered him so hard that he actually tore off his headphones in anger, threw them on his little podium, and stormed out of the studio. Now, the reason I was able to win is because I paid the price by, you know, I didn't wing it. I studied and studied hour after hour their techniques, and that's what enabled me to succeed. I didn't go in there, you know, just like trying to without preparation. And you know, the other thing is that I realize that on certain networks, they're completely unfair. They'll cut your audio level. They play all kinds of games on certain networks. One particular network, a big liberal cable news network, would do this regularly to me. I mean, they wouldn't do it the same way, but they would always rig it by using the following. And they would even do that on the other big cable news network, but to a lesser degree. And so the person or the position they want to favor, they'll turn up the mic on that person. And then if you're winning the bait, they'll turn your audio down so nobody can hear you and hear the fact that you're winning. Other things they will do is if you're debating, they'll give the other person FaceTime, and so you disappear. People are watching the television screen, and you're trying to make your point. But if they can't see your face and they manipulate your audio, they've given a huge advantage to your opponent. And then other things, like if there's somewhat of a studio audience, they'll turn up the volume on the studio audience's laughter when they're laughing at you, and turn it down if they're laughing at your opponent. And then another thing they'll do is they'll use the split screen technique. And if you're debating a couple of people, either they'll flash to the moderator or one of the people that you're debating, and they'll pan in close on how bored they look, and you know, so they rig it. But so what I learned is, I used a somewhat unorthodox approach. I would take charge of it, and I would call them on it aggressively. So what I would have said, for example, because you can't help, you know, make believe that you're in these debates when you used to do these debates. I mean, obviously I wasn't running for president, but I was debating. So, you know, you kind of put yourself in the position of the candidates, and you ask yourself what you would do. So going back to the vice presidential debate, I would have probably, the fourth time, I think I would have allowed it to happen three times, and then the fourth time Kane interrupted, I would have called him flat out on it, okay? Loudly and aggressively, but in control. And then if the moderator said, now you both of you guys, you know, need to quit interrupting each other, I would say, excuse me, name the moderator by name, and say, it's nice of you to correct us, but you need to be fair in your correction. I didn't interrupt him once. He interrupted me four times. So I'm fine with that as long as you apply the rules fairly. Right now, you are showing favoritism to my opponent, and that is an unfair debate. And I would have done it, said things like that in a variety of ways. I wouldn't just sit there passively and take it. So, I mean, that's their choice. I don't understand why they're doing that.
You know what, folks? I mean, this is so refreshing to hear. Here we have Paul McGuire. Here, he's a veteran of debates, not presidential debates, but debates on network, syndicated network national TV programs, Fox News, giving you the inside baseball of the tricks that they apply and what, of course, what he would do with respect to, given his position and how he would handle things. And I think it's valuable for all of us to learn from Paul McGuire, paulmcguire.us, to understand what's taking place and to really, to talk about this like adults, honestly, so we can all be armed when we go out, intellectually armed when we go out and talk with our neighbors and friends. Folks, you're listening to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. Follow us on Facebook. It's Hagmann Report on Facebook, Hagmann Report on Twitter as well. I've got an independent, or my own Twitter account. I think it's Hagmann PI, and Facebook as well. But definitely subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's the official Hagmann and Hagmann Report on YouTube. Subscribe there. Folks, Paul McGuire, paulmcguire.us is our guest. We're going to be right back. Stay right there.
Author, radio show host, prophecy expert, Paul McGuire. His latest book, A Prophecy of the Future of America 2016-2017, is available if you go to his website, paulmcguire.us. We are talking about election news, the 2016 election, as we are on the heels of another presidential debate coming up on Sunday.
He's got a great article on his website. Go ahead. I just want to make sure you mention that article on his website.
Folks, go to paulmcguire.us. Or go to HagmannReport.com.
Oh, it's not there yet.
Oh, it's not there yet. Okay. Go to paulmcguire.us and check out the article he has on the election. And Paul, what you said in the first segment about the lies from the news media, I know exactly what network you were talking about, but it does expand to all of them.
Tell me, Joe.
CNN.
Well, don't tell you, because then I'm going to get drawn into this. Everybody knows what we're talking about, so let's just leave.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I was kidding. We're just trying to get, never mind. I'm in a rare form tonight, Paul. All right. Go ahead,
and,
Joe.
I know this is something you're going to talk about tonight, Paul. If you go to paulmcguire.us, scroll down a little bit. The Paradise Mountain Church is having another prophecy and prayer meeting on October 13th at 7 p.m. The Days of Awe at the Garland Hotel in North Hollywood, California. It's free registration. Just go to the website and register there, and you can participate in that meeting. Now, back to the elections. I don't know where you want to go from here, Paul, but the second debate is coming up, and there was a lot of talk about the first debate, about Trump not making the most of his opportunities, and not really, being the, not really using the policies of Hillary Clinton, the crimes from Benghazi to the email scandals, not pointing those out and letting that get away from him. What do you think he can do better in this debate to come across as more presidential, or at least to get the talking points out that he should get out?
Well, that's a very good question, and I'm going to go back a little bit back into my own debates, even though I wasn't obviously running for president. But every time I was on, which was for 10 years, I was constantly on these the two biggest cable news networks, on the biggest shows, to debate. I mean, that was why they had me on. They wanted to see the sparks fly. But I'll get back to that in a second. When I watched Trump in the first debate debating Hillary, you know, the one thing that he did right, and it was really important that he did that, is that it's better to be humble and take a whipping than lose your temper and come off arrogant, especially in his particular situation. But the problem is he was not prepared for that debate. And he, in a sense, because he's confident in other arenas, he assumed that what he did in the other media arenas, like a reality television show, et cetera, would carry on over into a debate, and it didn't. And so she cleaned his clock, and she prepared. I mean, you may not like the way she prepared and all the rest of that stuff, but she, you know, you could tell she rehearsed her constantly. He didn't. And so he left himself wide open. He didn't get his message across. He didn't counter the arguments because he wasn't prepared. And that's very frustrating, you know, to watch somebody who loses because they couldn't get themselves mentally.
Man, I don't mean to interrupt, Paul, but my goodness, he had so many openings.
Exactly right. Exactly.
And I mean, Benghazi. Just the word Benghazi would have put
right
in meltdown mode. Aside from the emails, and I mean, so many openings, but yes, and I think, I don't know. He is a study in human behavior. She is just a study, in my view, and I've got to be careful when I say this because I got to proclaim I'm not a medical doctor. I cannot make diagnoses, but sociopathic behavior, in my view, that's my opinion, non-professional opinion. Just want to make sure, because like you, I don't want to, you know, it's a lawfare out there. Anyway,
but let me just say,
you go ahead.
Something people will inevitably misunderstand what I'm saying. But
yeah,
when you study the liberal left and you talk to people on the liberal left, just average liberal left people, they think they are convinced that Trump is a sociopath, a power hungry, you know. So anyway, that's just it's amazing how people have different perspectives on that. So, but the one thing I want to say is, yeah, he had so many openings, but because he was not prepared, he didn't take advantage of the openings. Pence, I thought, did a very good job, a very, very good job. In fact, I thought he did a far better job than Trump did. But Trump still allowed himself to be punched in the face a bunch of times. Not Trump, but Pence allowed himself to be punched in the face a bunch of times, and did not politely, aggressively combat that. And you know, he wanted to be likable, but he got hammered because he didn't aggressively stand his ground. And he could have done that without losing his temper, which makes me want this point. One thing, when you're in a debate like this, the audience, both liberal and conservative, hopefully have some sense or expectation of fairness that goes beyond their political agenda. I mean, they don't really, but they're at least open to some sense of fairness, hopefully, maybe. So when I would do these debates, and so, for example, if I was debating in the Trump debate with Hillary and Lester Holt there, I would have immediately said, probably in the first 10 minutes, no, in the first 5 minutes, the minute Holt started being the third debater, I would have openly called him on that. And you use humor, and you can never come off angry, and you can never lose your temper, and you have to be likable, and you have to have a certain amount of humility. Now, if you can do that, then you can be aggressive, because you're being aggressive without being coming off like you're out of control. But I would have said to Lester Holt, gee, I'm sorry. My notes here say that I was debating one person, Hillary Clinton. I wish I had known that it was a three-person debate, Mr. Holt. Then I would have prepared for you. And I would have kept at that, you know, pulling his pants down,
that,
so to speak,
yeah,
on national television. And you can do that, and it's humor, and then that's the end of it. He'll be quiet. And then with the fact checking, you don't let the guy keep coming up with these erroneous facts. You say, you know, you go above him, use a little humor, and you use a phrase or a line to control him. You know, I guess we need a fact. We need to have two sets of fact checkers. The first fact checker, and then in your case, Mr. Holt, a fact checker to check the fact checker. You know, little humor, little pun, but you end it. You know what I'm saying? So that's just something I wanted to add. But you got to be polite and humble and likable. And I apologize. What was your original question you asked me on this, though? What could you do better?
Well, yeah, that. But I also wanted to remind me to ask you in the presidential debate, what in the heck was Hillary wearing? Okay, behind underneath her. Maybe this is just a bogus issue. Maybe this is a distraction.
No,
maybe this is nothing.
I don't think it's bogus.
I personally think,
and it's nothing more than an opinion. Because I don't know it. I don't know the fact of what it was. It is my opinion that it was a electrical device to control Parkinson's. That's my opinion. To keep the Parkinson's, the weird facial expressions and body motions in check. That's what I think it was.
Man, I've seen car batteries smaller than that. I mean, well, that's an exaggeration, but yeah, it was too, to me, it was too big for any kind of a earpiece device.
Yeah, right.
You know, it just didn't look right.
And it would send an electrical impulse, you know, into the spine or the brain or whatever.
Interesting. But yeah. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you now.
No, that's okay. And then, you know, knowing your facts, I would stay up all night memorizing stuff because I knew I was number two. Most of the time, I would be debating with people, and at least initially, I had to prove myself. Or if I was debating the host of a program, they have all the assets, they have the star power, so. You know you're number two going in there, so you got to try harder, you know, and you have to really memorize your bullet points and your facts and being prepared. I thought Pence did that. Trump did not do that, and he paid the price.
Yeah, and in the vice presidential debate, it was, you know, what you brought up in the first segment, Tim Kaine did interrupt 72 times, and I read a good write-up on the vice presidential debate where it showed how, you know, Tim Kaine, what he was kind of going through with, you know, the first 20 minutes. He was so energized, they said, that he was stumbling over his words. And then the, you know, middle 20 minutes, he was repeating a lot of what he said in the beginning. And then the last 20 minutes, the half hour, he was just constantly interrupting. Every time Pence would start to talk about something, you know, Kaine would jump in there and interrupt. And then there was, they talked about after the debate how Hillary was overcompensating, or the Hillary campaign was overcompensating for the Kaine performance. And they changed their story about Hillary congratulating Kaine after the debate, which really wasn't important. But it will be very interesting to see, especially with the moderators this time around coming from the network you were talking about, and we were talking about them being anchors there, of how they treat the candidates. And if they don't think the bias shows, you know, the protection of Hillary and the slamming of Trump, you know, they're dead wrong. And it's not even people that are politically engaged, you know, 4 years, you know, every year, instead of just during these election cycles. We see, I've seen, you know, so many comments on Facebook and Twitter, and it makes you wonder where the poll numbers come from, showing Hillary in the lead with all these, you know, empty rallies and the comments on internet forums and articles. But it'll be interesting to see how the how much bias they allow into the debate this time around.
Well, again, though, we have to look at the obvious, which you brought up, Joe, and that is you've got. I don't know who the other moderator is. I know who Anderson Cooper is. The other moderator with the same network as Anderson Cooper?
I believe so, and it's a woman, and we'll get the name for you right now.
Okay. So right there, and especially with Anderson Cooper, and especially in relationship to that particular network, you know for a fact that you have a not only a biased moderator, but a moderator that is dedicated to your destruction. So, I mean, only a sucker, only the suckers in the Republican Party would allow that. Why do you allow that? I mean, you're going to have massive numbers of people, primarily brought about by Trump's star power, and you allow yourself to have the debate in a rigged position even before you go on. I mean, you're an idiot. I mean, that's an idiot's negotiation. And it's happened in the vice presidential debate, the first presidential debate, and it appears like it will happen. Because Anderson Cooper, now,
you got the...
They may play good cop. They may play good cop, bad cop. Anderson Cooper may be the man who plays the so-called fair thing, but they'll rig it some other way through fact-checking, camera angles, or whatever. And then the other thing is, you know, the lying, and this goes on to, you know, the same thing that I was sharing with your audience goes for surrogates or anybody who's debating, not just the presidential candidates. When you're debating on these news programs, you know, you may have you may not never be invited back on again. But what's the good of being invited back on again because they will allow some people to be the stooge. Some of these networks are looking for a conservative stooge, you know, and if that's what you want to do, then keep coming back and playing it their way. But if you've got to raise the bar politely and without losing your temper and demand fairness, and if they won't give it to you, then don't come back on the program. You're a fool if you do, because you're losing more than you're gaining.
And you know, to your credit, Paul, I know you've done that as well. You know, no one plays Paul McGuire for the fool for any price. I can tell you that, knowing Paul and knowing his history. And thank you for that. But you're exactly right. How networks and how media outlets will use people, and especially in the conservative, Christian conservative, it's even better to be the whipping boy. But anyway, to answer your question, aside from Peter Pan, Anderson Cooper, I'm sorry, I get the two confused. It's going to be Martha Raddatz.
The name is familiar, and I probably see
her. ABC News. And Anderson Cooper from CNN.
Well, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, AOL, Time Warner, and this is the real thing, is they and Fox News Network, they're all controlled by the globalist elite. But the globalist elite, I think Rupert Murdoch allowed Fox News and Fox Business Channel to be somewhat different, not totally different, but somewhat different, and it appears his son wants to make it more of a liberal network. But for the time being, it leans. It's not conservative, but at least it allows conservative opinions. Whereas NBC, ABC, CBS, PBS, MSNBC, CNN, they are the propaganda machines for the globalist elite, and they, you know, none of these journalists. That's why people shouldn't be like obsessed with anger towards the faces, the media personalities. They're puppets controlled by their puppet masters, and they've been given. Believe me, they sat down in meetings where they've been told, "Do whatever it takes, Trump, take Trump down, and we'll cover your butt." And that's what they're doing now. You could anticipate, this was a year ago, I anticipated that CNN's ratings were going to just tank big time, and their advertising revenues, which they did, because they went into a militant anti-Trump position, and their rankings plummeted. Then, when it was a gain to them during the primaries, they had Trump on a lot, and as you guys both probably recall, Fox News was somewhat adversarial to Trump during the primaries and sided with Cruz and some of the other Republican candidates, and CNN took advantage of that and they promoted, in a manner of speaking, Trump. So they had Trump on all the time, and their ratings surged upwards. Now that we're back to the real game, which is the actual presidential election, where the stakes are super high, they're 24/7 trying to take down Trump. So what's going to happen to them? It doesn't matter, though, see, because the people that own them and control them, their actual ratings are probably crashing. I mean, we know they were number 9 last month, which is way below Fox. But I guarantee that now they're probably number 14 or 12 or whatever. I mean, they're way under MSNBC in these things because everybody's annoyed. Nobody wants to watch them that has any conservative leaning. And their advertisers are getting killed, and their ratings are getting killed. But they're covered. They're financially covered because the corporation that owns them, that is controlled by the globalist elite, has given them the green light to take down Trump, and they've also made the promise, your jobs are secure, we'll carry you, and we'll continue to infuse capital or money into CNN, and that's what's happening. They're ideologically driven. So many of these major media outfits are not profit-driven. They don't give a hoot if they make profit. I mean, they don't care. As long as they have their ideology and they can promote it, and that's because they're being financed secretly by these six corporations, and as long as they do their job, like promoting trade treaties and hiding certain truths, or promoting this candidate versus that candidate, the jobs are secure and they'll be propped up. They won't go bankrupt.
And folks, Paul McGuire writes about this extensively, about the corporation, the ownership, the media, the captured the corporate media in his book, A Prophecy of the Future of America 2016-2017, as well as A Prophecy of the Future of America. Both books, independent of one another, are great reads. Get them at via paulmcguire.us, his website, paulmcguire.us, and of course, we have both, and great reads. But, you know, Fox News has, to me, you mentioned Rupert Murdoch, but my goodness, it seems to me that the Saudis have more influence at Fox than anyone else. And the CIA, of course, it was back in the 70s, as you point out in your previous book, and I think Mass Awakening. You know, a number of books that you've written about the CIA infiltration throughout the media, at least one, if not more than one point of contact in each branch of the media.
Which, by the way, was openly bragged about. If people were doing, I mean, it's hard for people to get, I guess, access to this research, but the CIA was openly boasting and bragging about this. In fact, I'm paraphrasing a quote from one of the former heads of the CIA, or at least one of the top people of the CIA, going back a number of years. And he said, this is a paraphrase of a quote, he said, anybody who is anybody in the media works for us. And he was inferring that entertainment industry, media journalists, print journalists, you know, whoever you are in the media complex, and if you're big, you work indirectly or directly for them, the agency.
Yep. There you go.
I have some wild theories, which I don't think I should say on the air because they're too wild. I think they're probably true, but I'm not gonna share them on the air right now. let's just use the word as a hint, Manchurian candidates, and leave it at that.
Oh yeah, you know, I had a conversation with somebody about this, about that very subject, in that very same context. So you're not too far off, and feel free to jump in with both feet if you want. But
well, I wrote about this in A Prophecy of the Future of America, the first book,
yep.
And I wrote about it in Mass Awakening and in Standing Down Goliath. I don't know what percentage, and I'm not connecting this, by the way, I'm not connecting this assertion to the CIA in this particular statement, not statement, but this particular thing that I'm communicating and that I wrote about. I'm not affiliating it with one intelligence agency or another. But I believe that there are a certain percentage of key media personalities in the hip-hop, rock and roll industries, music industries, in the entertainment industry, acting and directors, in the television personality, actors and television journalists, and media celebrities. I think there are a certain percentage. Now, I can't prove this 100%, so it's partially theoretical, and I don't want to mislead people into thinking that I have 100 conclusive proof or evidence, because I don't. I have a working theory based on research that I explain in my books, like A Prophecy of the Future of America, the first one, and Mass Awakening. When we go back to the origination of MKUltra and the Manchurian Candidate, you know, and for those who don't know what that is, and most of your listeners do know what it is, you know, the Born Identity thing, the creation of super soldiers or super assassins through mind control, programming, behavioral conditioning. And the behavioral conditioning and mind control in the creation of, like, the Born Identity super soldiers or super spies involved, among other things, the use of LSD. So the Born Identity comes from – Born comes from the name Dr. Peter Born, who was obviously affiliated with certain agencies in intelligence, but apparently, and this is from the outside looking in mind control programs. And he also happened to be, by the way, President Jimmy Carter's psychiatrist or psychologist, Dr. Peter Born. So it's interesting that the writers and creators of the Born Identity movie series knew who Bourne was. They obviously did their homework. And when you watch their movies, the ability of these super assassin spies in the Bourne Identity movies and their behavioral characteristics, unusual strength, amazing quickness of reflexes, their physical hand-to-hand combat abilities are through the roof, their abilities to hit targets here, sensory information is at such a heightened level, and that I believe is being done because that's doable, and it was doable back in the 70s. So then take that same methodology and then apply it to the creation of, let's say, somewhat artificial personalities in media or writing or journalism or rock and roll or whatever. And it may not necessarily be connected to, let's say, an intelligence agency. It could be connected to a cult, a satanic cult.
Hold that thought. We're up against the top of the hour break. We will pick up right where we left off on the other side. Folks, you're listening to Paul McGuire. PaulMcGuire.us is the website. We'll be right back after these short messages. Stay with us.